Blog Talk Radio.
Kyrie Bill, welcome to the Jasar's Love Show. My name is Isaiah. I have the privilege of introducing the host. You know her. She's my favorite person. Will you please join me in welcoming my grandmother, Mama Jahi?
All right. We're waiting for Mama Jahi to call in. I understand she's out and about it. She's with Isaiah in Sunshine today. So hopefully, you know, we get her in here on the call. I've texted her a couple of times to just remind her to call in and to let her know that the show is up and running and broadcasting. Hold on again while I attempt to do this one more time. All right, we have Mama Jahi in the studio. And Isaiah's already introduced you, so you can go ahead and take it away.
Hello, Jumbo. How's everybody? I hope you're doing well. I want to thank all of the listeners for listening in to Home Based Business 101. And especially want to thank my husband, Baba Satavi Jahi, for creating this platform, Home Based Business 101. And again, welcoming you to the Just Sorry's Love Show. I am out in the battle with lovely day, visiting various family members and having a really, really nice day, which I guess will be my topic for today. And that is enjoying your day, enjoying each and every day that you have. You just never know, you know, what is going to be in store for us. So it's just really good to try to get the best out of every day that is given to you. We just came out of a pretty rough winter here in the Baltimore, Maryland area. And I say pretty rough because, you know, we didn't get a lot of snow. Boy, we had some cold, windy days. As a matter of fact, we had a pretty cold, windy day up until last Thursday, which, as you all know, we're already into springtime. But I had the blessing of meeting a couple of people who were from Los Angeles, and they were like, we are loving this weather. Hey, talk about enjoying every day, right? I met some people from Los Angeles, California, and they were sharing with me that they're actually moving to the Maryland area because they wanted to live somewhere where you get more of a variety in the weather. So they're coming all the way across here to the East Coast, leaving the West Coast, just to experience winter, spring, summer, and fall. And I guess it says a lot about life. You know, one person thinks that something's good, and another person thinks that the exact same thing is bad. One person's trash is somebody else's treasure. Thank you. Because I was having a moment there. It's someone else's treasure. And it happens all the time. So it just so happens though that I'm a person, I just love the Maryland area. I love this East Coast area where we get all the weather. We get winter, spring, summer, and fall, which helps us to be able to have a lot of analogies about life and how in your entire life, in one day, you can feel winter, and that same day, you can actually feel summer. You can feel coldness when you wake up in the morning, and you can feel warmth in the afternoon. You can experience a coldness in your life, and you can experience a warmth in the same day or same week where things may be better. On the same token, you can get in situations where it can get a little bit too hot for you, you know? And you're looking forward to a cool breeze to kind of calm you down. So experiencing different seasons can help people have a more balanced life, and that's what the young lady was sharing with me. She felt that in her experience of being here for about a year now, that she was experiencing more balance in her life because for the first time in her life, she really experienced cold and the snow and the ice and the hard rain and the sleet. And she really experienced the springtime, the blooming of new life and the plants blossoming and the birds coming back out and chirping. And last year was her first time here, and she experienced the change from the coolness of the summer of the spring to the more intense warmth of the summer, which she's more used to the warmth living in L.A. And then as fall came, that chill that hits the air and just makes you feel like a brand new person around September and October. And those of you who have been following me, you know that September is always my second new year. I have a new year that I celebrate January the 1st, like everyone else. And then around September, I usually celebrate the new year. And that came from the way that going back to school would make me feel like it was a new year. And it was a new school year. So I made that my new year. You know, all my life, that was my new year, my second new year, a second opportunity. And it works really well for me having my own businesses because for my dance and theater children, they would come in September, the new year for them. And it would be a new year that would last from September with most dance classes and with a recital somewhere around May. So that ended up really good. That would be my new year. I would be invigorated, excited, all these children coming in to the program, and that would be very energizing. So the Creator gives us these experiences. He gives us winter, spring, summer, and fall so that we can change things around. We can feel differently about things. We can see things through a new light. We can see things through the snowflakes, or as I shared with you before. We can see things through the crystals of the sleet, with each one looking so differently. We can see things through the wind blowing. We can appreciate, you know, each day and each moment because each season is so different. Each one is a gift. It's such a beautiful thing seeing these. As I was walking here to visit today, seeing the little teeny flowers, the tulips and things opening up and pushing their way through the soil and saying, hello, I think I'm going to come out. Is it really going to be spring? I mean, you all going to be done with winter now, right? Am I going to be able to experience spring and come on out and show my vibrant purples and blues and yellows and whatever color, you know, different flowers are, that amazes me also because there's so many colors of the flowers. And then Saturday morning, I heard the most beautiful sound of the bird, of this bird singing. It was a special bird over in the wooded area, the part of Baltimore City that I'm staying at right now. And it was just beautiful hearing this bird. It was just really, really, really beautiful hearing this bird. I don't know if anybody else is talking right now. I'm kind of confused again. This message I just got. I don't know. I hope it's two of us not trying to talk at the same time. I have no idea. Okay, I'm going to talk just for a few more seconds, and I'm going to try to figure out if my husband's trying to say something. Let's see, I can't hear him. All right, please bear with us. We're having a little technical difficulty. Okay, I don't know. Let's see. Go back in here. Okay, if you're trying to talk, I can't hear you. I don't know what's going on. Let's keep talking. I pray that just text me if you need to talk and if you can't hear me and you need to talk because I can't hear you. I don't know why I can't hear you, but I can't hear anybody. I don't know what's going on. Okay, so I hope the show is going through. Welcome to the Jasari's Love Show. We may be having technical difficulties. I hope you can hear me. I don't know if my husband's trying to talk. I can't hear anyone. Okay, I'm using a cell phone device, people. I don't have a laptop where I can monitor my screen or anything like that, so please bear with us. I'm hoping that I can still give you a message today. So, as I was saying, you know, in walking, I have just been blessed to be able to enjoy looking at the sky and just enjoying it for what it is, the beautiful blueness, when there are clouds in the sky, the different wisps of clouds, some of them, as you can see for yourself, light white wisp of clouds, sometimes billowing white clouds flowing along together. And, you know, you can always see something in a cloud, a face, a dog, the shape of an animal. I'm always seeing that, just always. And sometimes I even monitor how fast the clouds appear to be moving. I don't know if he's trying to talk. I can't hear anybody. But I watch that because I can tell if a storm is coming through, how fast it may get to my area. I'm my own little weather woman, you know. So, a couple of weeks ago, my husband and I were staying at home, two suites down in, on East Pleasant Street in Baltimore City, down in the downtown area, and the wind was ferocious. I mean, it was cold out, and the wind was ferocious, okay? I mean, really, hitting like 30 miles an hour. And from my hotel window, I could see trash, empty bags, and it was trash or debris that was flying through the air. And it looked to me like it had gotten caught off, if you know Baltimore. It maybe was coming from way up on Highway Street. It's not past that part of West Baltimore. And I actually saw it make its crossing into East Baltimore. And this piece of trash, just to go show you paying attention to nature, the wind, and how we interact with it, how we can hurt it or make it better, the effects that we're having in our ecosystem, is that this trash had traveled a couple of miles potentially. And was going to travel. I'm watching it myself travel at least a mile from my vantage point. I'm seeing it come across these tall buildings up in the air, way past what looks like maybe Howard Street. And already from my view, it had passed the viaduct and was hitting down Route 40 or Pulaski Highway. Amazing, amazing. But that is living someplace where the wind can pick up like that. And two or three things, you know, that go in that, you know, if we're not responsible with our trash, our garbage, our plastic bags and things like that, how we don't even know the impact that we're having on our communities by not making sure that trash is put there. Okay, he can't hear me. I got to call him again. All right, let me call him again. You hang up. You can't hear me. So what's going on? Okay, I'm going to hang up. No one can hear me anyway. I really want to be on the line. Can you hear me? I have no idea. Yeah. I don't know.
I can hear you.
Okay, people can hear me.
I can hear you. I had stepped outside a second to check on Charles as he was putting plants down in the ground. We're doing our gardening today, so.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what I was talking about, you know, the beauty of being on the eastern side of the country where have all the seasons. And, you know, that brings me to the point of what you're talking about, being able to garden, because you have such a variety of seasons here. You know, we just believe we're just leaving winter in Baltimore City, even though we had a taste of it last week. And we're officially feeling more like spring today. And there are people, who, like you say, who are putting the seeds out into the ground. So what type of gardening are you and Charles doing?
We got some watermelons down, putting down some jalapeno peppers, some tomatoes, some cabbage, some squash, corn, and some okra.
Okay. Sounds like a meal to me. So, sounds good. Yeah. So how is he enjoying the process?
He's managing. I helped out as much as I could, but I had gotten up earlier this morning and put our turkey wings in the oven. Cut up onions, bell peppers, and some garlic, some jalapeno peppers, and seasoned them up with that along with some carrots and some potatoes.
Okay, so you all just hear where all these peppers come from, right? They're going to come from the garden this year.
Yeah, they're going to come from the garden.
That's good, that's good. Well, I was sharing with the audience how, you know, in our own different way, we can enjoy the ecosystem, enjoy the change in the climate, temperatures, the seasons, and just being responsible concerning the ecosystem. In your case, in gardening, with a certain amount of responsibility that you have, you also get to reap the benefits. But I was sharing with them how, and when we were staying at Home to Suites on East Pleasant Street in downtown Baltimore, how I could see the trash and debris that had come from this maybe as far as Baltimore National Pike, which is in West Baltimore, had crossed over Charles Street, which is like 3 miles away from the Ellicott City area, and now was entering East Baltimore to possibly enter into Essex, which is a whole different county, which could be 10 miles away, if not more. And how we all have to be stewards of the planet, be more responsible, you know, with putting the lids down on trash, make sure your trash bags are being put away, so that this does not end up in our Chesapeake Bay or the Atlantic Ocean or on the ankles of, you know, creatures such as flying birds, other birds, other creatures, you know, that may be in the water or just stumble across something. So what are some of the things that you know that you all have to do in gardening? I know you have to prepare the ground. So what were some of the things that you had to do in helping Charles, and what are some of the things that he learned about preparing the ground?
Well, we had to, we had to turn the ground and, to make sure that we turned the ground so that we got all the weeds and stuff up. And then we put the plants down in the ground along with some water. We'll get some fertilizer on them later on this week in terms of helping them, with becoming acclimated to their ecosystem. So that's one of the things that we've really been working on, and just taking time to make sure that everything is in order in terms of the garden being properly prepped and just taking the time to make sure that the area that we turn gets plenty of sunlight so that the ground and the water and all of that that can help the plants get plenty of nutrients and plenty of access to the sun. So those are some of the things that, you know, we needed to do to get the area ready.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good. I know from having participated with you in several gardens, one in Baltimore, the Rodno Heights Culture Center, in which we had a huge garden. It started off small, but it became really, really big. I know that what I like about the garden is that when you step up on top of the keeping it the weeds out, that's really the hardest part after you've gotten it, you know, started. But once we do that, you can have such a flourishing, beautiful garden. And the rewards are just incredible when we think about, in that setting, the amount of families that could take home food, that could take home tomatoes and cucumbers and eggplants, just to name a few of the things that we were growing then. That was through the forestry program and through Mosaic Gardens, Cornell University. You know, that was just awesome, you know, opportunity and an awesome way of learning and also participating with other entities, you know, the universities and things like that. But then being able to move to New Orleans, you had a garden there. Remember that garden?
Yes, I do.
So you want to share with us a little bit about that? I just remember these very broken down looking banana trees and how you brought them back to life. You want to share a little bit about the different things that were already in the garden and the thing,
this is
a whole different thing.
Yeah, we had banana trees in the garden and we pruned those back so that they could better grow, and they did. And then in the process of growing, they yielded quite a few bananas. We had orange tree and lemon trees in the already there in the area in terms of the garden, and a Japanese pear tree that was already there. And then we grew tomatoes, green onions. I think what else did we have in the garden? Tomatoes, green onions. I believe I have some cucumbers and I think some squash. So, you know, but I never did get a chance to see the outcome of the vegetable gardens because Katrina came, and when Katrina came, you know, we had to roll out. So I don't know how well that particular grew or what it did in terms of the garden. So but that was an interesting time in terms of things that we had put together for us, that project.
Yeah, and the other thing about, you know, the gardening, the pruning back, the clearing away, is how the whole process is in our life. This is Home-Based Business 101, and there's going to be times in your life where you have to prune back. You may have to cut back on the hours of something that you're doing, or maybe it's a health issue. Like I'm fasting right now, so I've been doing a small fast, nothing big, making sure that I'm only eating. Well, today I did eat a piece of meat. I was out visiting, and I actually forgot and got carried away with the visitation. But I really am getting into my almond milk. I had berries, I had strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, and blackberries. And then I had a trumpet kind of a thing with cranberries in the afternoon, some apple with some honey. And so cutting back, clearing the weeds in my health system, you know, clearing the weeds in our brain, clearing the weeds in our thinking, maybe throwing out some extra papers that we've collected, you know, clearing an area out. That's another way of weeding an area. Sometimes it's not just in the garden, but it's in our life. It's weeding out things that I didn't need, that maybe extra, you know, notes and things that I've taken that I didn't need anymore, papers and things that I didn't need anymore, clearing a space out for new things, you know. For example, we have a car that we're going to be eventually getting rid of. We're going to be letting it go. And so that makes space for brand new things. So we had, so we've done gardening in the northeast sector, which is Baltimore, Maryland. We did gardening in New Orleans, which is considered the middle of the country, right? South, the southern part and the middle part of the country. We experienced the changes of the weather there, which was, I did enjoy the weather, hot, but I do remember that my belief system there was to always keep something on for mosquitoes. At least we had to keep it on. It didn't bother you, but Sunshine and myself and our grandson had to keep something on for mosquitoes and sunscreen. So that's the other thing, too. Always use your sunscreen. Even when you're out gardening, it's important to have your sunscreen on. And so now you're in North Carolina and you're gardening again. And I remember our first experience gardening in North Carolina was with Happy Hills, right? Was that Happy Hills? Hopefully you're still there.
Yes, it was Happy Hills.
Okay, good. Okay, you may have been muted. Happy Hills and also on Park Avenue. Park Avenue? What was the name of that? Park Place. On Park Place where we were living. We had a house. That particular house had a lot of beautiful, they had a garden there already. It had a flower garden that I thought was beautiful. It was beautiful when we got there, and I just loved trying my best to maintain it. And that I enjoyed. That was one of the things that I definitely enjoyed about living in that particular house. And you would go out and you would garden. And I remember that year that you yielded so many tomatoes and cucumbers that we did not have to buy any tomatoes or cucumbers at all that summer. Yeah, that was one of the main things that I remember about that, that every evening we could sit down and have fresh, homegrown, grown in our backyard by you, by Mrs. Tally, tomatoes and cucumbers. And then, of course, we started participating with the garden program, the community garden over at Happy Hills, right in Rocky Mount. You want to tell us a little bit about that community garden?
Yes, it was a community garden, and in the community garden that we was a part of in terms of Happy Hills, basically had people from the community who was able to purchase a 10-by-10 plot. And that 10-by-10 plot, you know, it cost you like, well, first it was free, then they started charging, and the cost was like $20 for 10-by-10 plot. And, you know, and it just so happened that the person who was responsible for the garden in that area, his name was Mr. Farmer. And I thought that was very interesting in terms of his name, Mr. Farmer. And, you know, they had a shed in which they had tools for you to use. I'm not sure what's happening with that area right now in terms of the tools, the shed, and all of that, and whether or not they're able to keep that going. But when he transitioned, and it's sort of like the key person who was responsible for taking care of making sure that the community participated and was involved in the the garden process, that he was no longer there. So with him no longer being there, then it needed to be run or maintained by some other people. And those other people, they did what they could do. But I think what happened was the people that was used to dealing with Mr. Farmer either lost interest or really decided that that was, you know, had moved on to do some other things. But it was a great experience. We did that for about 3 years. I remember Isaiah walking from the garden, pulled the bring back home, the little cherry tomatoes and stuff we was growing and the pear tomatoes. And he would pick them. And as he would pick them, by the time we would get home, tomatoes that he had picked for you, he had ate all of them. So, you know, that was interesting.
I remember that
experience. Yeah. Yeah.
It opens up for an opportunity for so much learning, you know, take place. I remember the day that I got out there early with you at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the spider, you didn't see the spider, I don't think you saw it, as big as my hand. It was literally as big as my hand, and that was it for me for the day. I'm sorry. I lost all courage after that for that particular project on that day. So. Do you remember that big spider, or did you ever see it that day?
I remember seeing it.
Yeah, it was big as my head. It was very scary. I do not know what kind of spider it was. It was a big, huge spider with big legs, big, scary legs. It could have been a, I don't know if they have tarantulas in North Carolina, but whatever it was, I should look it up, I guess. But it kind of was like, I hate to be a scaredy cat, but this is Jaheim, this is always love. Was exit stage left, right, away from the spider, okay? So there were those I could do little moments when we were there. There were those speaking to and talking to the animals or to the spider. I was gone. But not to frighten anybody, but, you know, you have to be aware of it. It's all a part of nature. Worms don't bother me. They didn't scare me. And little spiders don't scare me, but that spider was as big as my hand. That spider coming at me, probably trying to get away from me, but I didn't know it was coming right at me. at a great rate of speed was very frightening for me. But, you know, we have to be aware that it is ecosystem. It's our life. It's all of God's creatures, all, you know, in the soil, building their homes, making it through, trying to get from point A to point B. And that's, you know, so it's a learning experience as far as gardening. 9 times out of 10, you just come across, the most thing you actually see is worms, right?
Sorry.
I see, you really don't see as many spiders like that. You just see worms mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a one-time thing, but I do want to let people know I did see a huge spider. Yeah. Across the country, there are a lot of gardening projects. I don't know if you knew it or not, Chitali, but there is a farm. I have to get the exact location, an African-American-owned family farm in Baltimore City, in the city. Did you hear about that?
I remember seeing some information on that and trying to remember where it's located at in the city. But, yeah, it made national news.
Yeah, it was on one of the New Orleans channels. It might have been on public education TV 2 weeks ago. I wrote it down. I just have to look back to my notes so I can connect with them. And one of our friends, Kareem Azzi, his daughter, Issei is going to be doing a special project. She should be doing it any week now, so I have to get back with them. It's going to be a gardening program that she's bringing in from her college years of traveling around the world and studying not only ecosystems but community and building community. And again, this is the Jasari's Love Show, and this is all about building community, building family, building life within the ecosystem, within nature, our gardening, our farming, our flower gardens, as well as our making sure that we have sustainable food, that we can sustain ourselves with our own gardens. And she's going to be sharing that information. And she's been living out in Iowa and different places out in the Midwest. And she's going to be sharing what she has learned from people. She's traveled to India. She studied with her own gurus and you know, different people from India, Buddhist priests. And so she's going to be sharing her perspective, what she's learned, how people are living in different places of the planet, and how we can utilize that information to build a stronger community for our families, so that people can have food. Because we know that in most cities we have what they call the food desert, and that's a very serious thing. And for people who may not know what a food desert is, do you want to kind of share with them what a food desert is, or do you remember that terminology, the food desert?
Basically, this, when people say food desert, we're talking about is that the majority of the things that you eat are just like stores that sell pretzels, peanuts, those type things, some canned meats, stuff like that, but basically no fresh produce. And so it's just interesting in terms of, you know, that whole approach of how and what people are experiencing and going through. I mean, I remember the time you told me when you was out shopping with a parent, and you went to the fresh produce area and, you know, was looking at getting some fresh produce and stuff. And the person looked at you like, I eat frozen vegetables. You know, and you was like, well, you know, I eat fresh vegetables. And they just didn't really grasp or understand the value of eating fresh vegetables. So, you know, that is just a very interesting experience in terms of the whole experience of growing your food, eating your own food, and being able to do that. So, you know, and it's just interesting, the folks that don't do that.
Yeah, you know, I also lived in Baltimore City. I lived in Yale Heights, and at that time, two of the major stores in the area, three, left. One was an A&T, one was, I think, a Pantry Pride, and I don't know the name of the other one, but each one was in walking distance from where I was living at, and before I could blink my eye, they all three were gone, and I had a car at first, and then I had car trouble, and the nearest store was a giant food store, Made in Choice, which for me was about a mile away, a mile and a half, and the other store was in Emerson Village, which was maybe a mile and a half, 2 miles from where I lived at, and it was impossible. It was a lot of difficulty and making sure that we did groceries. So my daughter and I would just get a few things at a time. We would try to keep two or three basic items in the house so it was just her and I, so that we could have, milk was a major thing, making sure she had milk for cereal. potatoes and chicken. Even though it was just two of us, we still needed to have those staples in the house, you know, your potatoes, your chicken, your whatever kind of greens you're going to have. You're going to have, back then I didn't eat as much turkey meat as I eat now. Now I eat more turkey burgers than I have hamburgers. Back then it was hamburger. It was, you know, ground beef. And so today, that same community is in a desert because they only have the Giants. They have the store on Edmondson Avenue. So there's more people who are living in other areas. You also live in a desert when you cannot walk to your nearest grocery store where you can actually buy groceries, not potato chips and you know, snack food, but you can actually buy healthy or, well, I call turkey meat healthier than the other, but for vegan people, you want vegetables, right? Is it vegetarian or vegan? But for the average person to get to the store to get their chicken, their ground beef, you know, things like that, even potatoes. I mean, you know, trying to get potatoes and yams and trying to get corn, whatever you're eating, when you can't get to the store and that within 15 to 20 minutes, you are living in a desert, a food desert. And if you don't grow your own food, you're dependent upon that one or two store to stay in stock, to keep in stock enough food for you, all the thousands of people in your community. So if a disaster strikes, your store is closed, they can't get the goods in or out to the store, you don't have access to food. If you have your own garden, and for those people who can, God bless you, I need to can myself, can your tomatoes, you can have them in the wintertime. It's really good to go back to old school, where our grandparents knew how to do things. And that is canning and how to do jamming and juicing and, you know, things like that. But it all starts with even realizing where does food come from and that in your backyard you can have a garden. Even on your porch, my husband actually grew a delicious head of lettuce on our porch in Baltimore City in a small planter, right? So, Dolly, remember that?
Yeah. I grew a head of cabbage in a flower pot, and grew a head of lettuce in a flower pot. And I remember you asking me, say, you grew that in the flower pot? And I said, yes, I did.
Yeah, I watched it. I was right there with you. The thing that got me was it was so beautiful, I almost didn't want to eat it, but it tasted as good as it looked, folks. It tasted as good as it looked, okay? It actually tasted as good as it looked. So, again, learning things and learning about sustainability. Food is very important, you know, to know what we can do to feed ourselves. So I know I might be off topic for today because I didn't get a chance to see what the topic was, but the topic is about life, it's about love, and loving this earth that we're here living on, appreciating it, knowing that we can grow our own food. There's a lot of healthy things out here for us to eat. Depending on what part of the country you live in, you get a chance to experience winter, spring, summer, and fall, and everything that goes along with it, and all the different foods that you can grow winter, spring, summer, and fall. You can grow collard greens in winter in North Carolina and up here, you know, in the Maryland area. And just appreciating those things and knowing the importance of being able to monitor the kind of food that you're growing, the kind of food that you're consuming. A lot of times when my husband goes to the market, well, now when I go to the market too, if I'm up here in Maryland, I'm going to the market, people looking at my cart and they're going, wow, you have a lot of good stuff in that cart. You know, because in my cart, you're going to find almond milk. You're going to find, there's a certain brand that I buy, I try to get that out to you, but I can't think of it right now. I can never remember the name of it. Blue Diamond, I think is the name of it, Blue Diamond. And it's delicious. It's vanilla almond milk. I drink that in the morning. I get my raspberries, my strawberries, and my blueberries in. Sometimes I have a healthy cereal, not a lot of sweet stuff, a healthy cereal. And the vegetables, making sure, you know, you get your vegetables in. My daughter shared with me the good things about aloe vera juice and all the different things that are really, really going to help you with your memory, your energy. I'm working with children during the day, and I know I need that energy. I can't get sleepy. So my plan for next week is going to be the trail mix. And I already did a dry run with that. It worked out really good. My almond milk in the morning with some berries, you know, half an hour later. There's some of these things you can grow in here. I'm not sure about the berries yet. I have to check that. I know blueberries grow in Mississippi, right? We know about that. Strawberries, they grow in North Carolina. They may grow in Maryland. I'm not sure. But they're very healthy. Huh?
I say it depends on what type of spring you have, because if you can get them down in the ground in March, then you can usually have a crop by July.
Wow, that's good. Milk. Okay.
Yeah.
I know the soil, too, the soil.
Yeah, the soil is important, too, in terms of how you prepare your soil. And, again, you know, we're using the term soil, not dirt.
Yes. Yeah, I remember that from Mosaic, Garden Mosaics. The Cornell and the University of Baltimore, working with those wonderful people there, just love that all of them and all that they did for us. So it's just all a part of the whole community experience. And then it brings you, you know, remember all the people we met in the community, Miss Queenie and Miss Countess and Mr. Eldridge and even in Happy Hills in North Carolina, the gardening helps you meet people who have common interests. One is eating good food, right? Healthy food. So
yeah, it becomes a meeting place. We got Mr. David Murphy has called in. So if you want to start wrapping up, you can wrap up, and then we can transition over to him.
That would be wonderful. Yes, this is the Jasari's Love Show about to wrap up, and we were kind of talking about the ecosystem and our gardening and weeding and enjoying the seasons, which brings us right in time for Mr. David Murphy, because he's got this exciting newspaper. And when I get a chance, as I read through the newspaper, there's a lot of new information that he's sharing with us, and the editors are sharing. And it gives us a chance to weed our minds, to prepare ourselves for improving our lives in so many ways. And so I'm going to, again, close out my part of the show. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody next Sunday. I should be available next Sunday. And we'll post the topic. I'm not sure what it's going to be right now, but hopefully it will be something that will interest you. And again, you may want to look up what is a food desert and make sure that you can create your garden. And you want some gardening tips, you can always go to Baba Jahi, and you can give out the website when you get ready for that. Good gardening tips, things that he's actually used through the years that have allowed us to have delicious salads, filled with tomatoes and filled with cucumbers, which makes our minds nice and healthy and sharp. So we open up that newspaper, the National Black Unity News, we can really soak in some brand new information, because our brains are sharp, and we're all ready for Mr. David Murphy of the National Black Unity News. Are you there, David Murphy?
Yes, how you doing?
Oh, man, I'm excited. It's another day. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Oh, that's a mouthful.
I'm telling you, man.
Well.
Yeah, can you...
Well, again, I want to first and foremost thank God for this opportunity, because it is a great opportunity to share information, because information is power when you use it correctly. And we are putting out information with the National Black Unity News. It's a publication that is circulated nationwide and beyond. And it's a publication that's kind of unique in its own format, because we don't do what you call general news. We have solution-oriented information in our publication, and it's geared toward the Black African-American community. And the reason why it's geared toward that, because there's a disparity, not only here in my town, in this country, but throughout the world as well. And it's unfortunately we have to put out publications like this, but it's necessary that we share information with our own, because first and foremost, I share this pertinent information with everyone, that we own less than 1% of the media. So this format that we're speaking on now is a valuable tool. It's a diamond in the rough, and we all need to support this type of format, because it's another communication tool, and we need all, like I say, we own less than 1% of the media. So when you hear a black radio show or a black newspaper or a TV show or something like that, you need to pay utmost attention to it and support it, because most of them are trying to support you. Now, with that being said, this edition of the National Black Unity News is uniquely formatted, because we have a variety of people participating with them. We call them editors. And 90% of our editors are business owners, and they come from a variety of subject matters, from travel, real estate, men issues, women issues, youth services, and financial services, and a variety of formats. And each one of our editors, not only do they share information about their particular industry, but they also share information to you to help you or prevent you from falling into pitfalls or traps that could devastate your life. For instance, like travel, you know, with this type of service, not only can it save you money, it can make you money as well. And real estate, you can, that's a major purchase. And we have people on our team that's willing to share information with you, the inside trades of the industry, so that you won't make mistakes, costly mistakes, devastating mistakes. And that's the way it is throughout the whole publication. And we also have commentary about the state of the union, what's going on with us as a people, and some solutions as to how we can remedy some of the situations that we're in. And I also like to share with the people again, like I said, it's this publication is for us and by us, but we don't put down any group or race of people. All we try to do is uplift our own. We try to equal the playing field. And we ain't trying to. We are equaling it, because we are making a difference. Just like this radio format, it's making a difference. It's making a difference for the National Black Unity News. It's making a difference for me, because I get on here and I find out great information as well. And so, you know, for such a time as this, this is, people, let me just say, this is serious, serious times. And it's been systematically programs and systems are already in place, and they're implementing all types of things that to our devastation. And I know it sounds like gloom and doom, but the truth will make us free. We have to be alert. People are out here doing all sorts of things, from our educational systems, our dietary systems, educational, our communities, and even the information that we receiving is misconstrued and misinformed, and it uses all types of propaganda against us. And I say to myself, I'm no respecter of man. You know, I have no problem with no race or creed, But unfortunately, there's people out there who have problems with me just because of the color of my skin. And unfortunately, we live in a time like this, but you know, it always been that way. And some of the littlest thing, the little tiniest thing, that's why they say the little foxes, you know, can spoil the vine, because little things like race upsets the harmony of this entire country, actually the world, the universe, because we all bring something to the table. We are all individually made. It just so happened that I may be of this hue and you may be of that hue. And then we clump ourselves together and say we are this and we are that. But in the whole thick of things, we are all just people. And don't take that just people lightly, because we all uniquely made in our own way. We all can have a contribution to make. If we find out what that contribution may be, you never know. Sometimes it's just a smile, a handshake, a word to the wise, or a skill set. It could be a variety of things, and that you can alter and change this world. And so that's why I do the things I do, because I know for a fact that I have made a difference and many have made a difference in my life. You see, I stand on strong shoulders, strong black shoulders. People have paid a heavy penalty for me just to be on these airwaves. We have people that seen and unseen who paid the ultimate price just for people like me to do what I do, just to put out a publication. And how could I, how dare I sit down on the job when so many of us are still suffering, not only here in this country, but all over the world. I heard this story, and it bothers me so great. I saw a clip. It was a video of a young man. And they say he's extremely intelligent. You know, that depends on your definition of intelligence. But in any case, in this country, he dotted the I's and crossed the T's and fought SATs and all of that type of information. He was extremely successful and extremely intelligent in that department. So he was able to take great tests, and he applied to all the major colleges in this country. And every single one of them accepted him. The Harvards, the Yales, and everything else. This brother, he had it going on. As a matter of fact, every school he applied for accepted him. And that's extremely, extremely rare to reach those type of heights. But unfortunately, there was a news station, a channel, a network. They had about four or five people, two or three women and I think one man on there discussing this young man. Instead of giving his brother accolades, lifting him up, congratulating him about his accomplishments and the achievements that he reached, the objectives that he was able to, you know, to do what he has done. And do you know they was putting his brother down, saying that he was taking up space? Why did he have to apply to so many schools? Because other people could have applied, and he taking up space where other people could have used that space and time. And I mean, they find any excuse, any reason to put the brother down instead of lifting him. And they had about a 5 or 10 minute conversation about this young man on a national TV show, a news station, putting the brother down as if he did something wrong, just because he was a black man. Everybody that was speaking was all white Caucasian people, putting the brother there, still uplifting the net. So that just goes to show you, and I tell people this all the time, and you can just check the record. You don't have to take David Murphy's take on this. Every black African American or indigenous person in this country that has a skin tone like mine's, and I'm using my own industry. This is the industry that I work in. Through the media, has been slandered and scandalized through the mass media. I don't care how much money, I don't care if it's the Oprah Winfrey's, I don't care if it's the Michael Jordan, I don't care if it's Michael Jackson. They say, I don't care how well you sing, how well you can play ball, even Clarence Thomas, he's a Supreme Court justice. Every last one of them has been scandalized through the media. And so just think about this. If you was in a secluded area, a secluded white area, and you look at the news on a consistent basis, and every time you see one of us, a black person on there, scandalized through the media, and can you imagine the thought pattern that you will form? You can say to yourself, I don't care how much money them people make, how well he can sing, how well he can play ball, how fast he can run, ain't none of them no good. And that's the power of propaganda. And see, when people do that, then that's why a host of them think the way they do. Now, we get upset with some people and can't understand why. But if you're being fed that type of information about another group of people, it creates fear. And fear creates hate. And that's why people do that. You know, sometimes you can't highly, I mean, you know, if you don't know, you don't know. And people, perception is a powerful thing as well. And so if you're perceiving a group of people this way or that way, and you think they out to harm you, rob you, do no good to you, yes, you're going to be on alert. And that's all you know, because all you're getting your information from is one resource, and that's the media. If you never had met us, sit down and talk to us, lived amongst us. So that's what breeds this type of attitude to one group towards another. Because there's certain groups of people who call themselves protecting themselves or call themselves keeping another group down, and that's why they do the things that they do. But it's sad, but it's true, that's why we need to have balance in life. Everything needs balance. That's why it's an up and a down, a cold and a hot, an in and an out, because it's balance. And that's why I do the things that I do. That's why Brother Satire and Sister Cynthia Satire Jahi are putting information like out on these airwaves and through the newspaper as well, because they work with us in the newspaper. Because it's powerful. You're getting the information from another perspective, not from just one side. And so that's why I say it's extremely, extremely, extremely important to support efforts like what we are doing. It's extremely important to support the Jahis in the effort to keep this show up and running, because it takes time, money, and effort. And you know what? Freedom comes with a price. And that's why I say, you know, I can put out the best paper in the world, but, you know, I got to pay for that. I got to pay printers, and these people got to buy ink and all that kind of stuff, and it's not cheap. But the purpose is to help make us free. Help set us free, because information is power, as I said before, if you use it correctly. And so that's why I'm so honored, and I know it's a privilege to even be on this show, to even do what I do, to be blessed with skills to do what I do in the newspaper, because it is an honor and a privilege to assist my fellow man. Not just black people, but all people, because when other people pick this publication up too, they are getting the education as well, because they don't know. They don't know the truth, because they've been fed a bunch of lies as well. Just like they feed it to us, that's what they're perceiving too. And so all I'm suggesting to you is this. We have to. We must take care of ourselves. And then we can say, they say charity begins at home. Now, I'm going to give you another fact, and this is the way it is. You got Asian people, you got Italians, you got Jewish people, you got people who are all different nationalities, supports their own, because they know the benefits of this. They know that there's occurring futures for their children and their children's children. And they know that nobody else is going to do for them what they can do for themselves. You know, they got issues too. Italian people got issues too. Jewish people got it. Everybody got their issues, you know, because of this thing called race. And everybody brings something to the table. Now, we are powerful, powerful people, in spite of what mass press say about us. Why else is people coming from all over the world coming into our community to extract dollars from us? So we must have dollars to extract. But unfortunately, the field is not playing. They are, you know, we are the type of people, we support everyone. We have no problem with that. But unfortunately, others have problems with supporting us because they are busy supporting themselves. So all I'm suggesting to you, family, is no one, if you don't know it by now, no one is going to do for us what we can do for ourselves. And we have two powerful formats taking place right now. And quiet as it's kept, this is a powerful thing that's taking place right now. Here we are, I say we own less than 1% of the media. Here I am on a black radio show talking to my people about a black newspaper that's informing and educating my people. That's a powerful duet right there. Powerful. And things are coming to a head, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I don't want to be a prophet of doom, but, you know, they can say the people would perish with lack of knowledge. And so I'm just trying to give you some wisdom and knowledge about facts of life that is taking place not only in this country, but it's being done systematically, even your government. That's right, your government plays a big part in this. And but we who are called, and we who are that's in our individual hearts that's called to combat this wrong, to right this wrong, to stand up for righteousness sake and to stand up for justice sake. That's what we're doing. We're not trying to hurt anybody. We're trying to uplift our own. Do you know what's taking place in our communities? Murder, black on black crimes, drugs. You know, some areas in our cities, people are walking around like living zombies. That's why you see so many of these shows, because all you got to do is come through the hood and look at it, and that's just what it looks like. The houses are falling down. I was out in what they call Severn, Maryland yesterday at an event, and the brother made a wrong turn. And we end up going through the Harbor Tunnel. And we end up in the Dundalk area, and we driving all through those parts of the city, getting back to Route 40 to come back to the west side of town. And I go through the Dundalk area, and he was going through all these, just showing me the new houses that were being built in those areas. And I did not see empty houses, boarded up houses. The streets and businesses was prospering. And street signs, and all this stuff was in place. And I think the Mexican Americans are living in that area. And then I went through other areas with Caucasians living through. And these are old houses, just like the houses that we live in on the west side as well. But the houses are well kept. Money has been put into them, and then I moved into the black community, and it's a tale of two different cities.
Exactly, exactly.
It's a crying shame. Yeah, go ahead, sister.
I want to comment on that because I had to catch the bus to go to Lansdowne, and I had to go through Arbutus, Brother David Murphy, and it was spotless. And, I mean, on several occasions I went through there, okay? And I said to myself, okay, what is it? What is going on that, besides the fact, okay, maybe somebody does come out with the holes and holes thing, Sam, but there is money that goes into those communities. These communities were existing at the exact same time that our community existed in the inner city of Baltimore. They didn't just, you know, pop up, you know. They were existing in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s, and the 90s. And like you said, the money was not allocated to Park Heights, to Mount Street, all these different areas. There was a little drug war going on. But these other communities were there was pride, for one thing. The people, if you live in Little Italy, you have a certain kind of pride. If you live in Upper Park Heights, which is a more Jewish community, there's a certain kind of protection and a certain kind of pride. I just did some substitute teaching in a school. I'm not going to name any of the schools. But what I also see is the lack of, discipline, pride, and order. And one of the reasons why we talk about having rites of passage, you all have the men's group, right? You have the men's group. You talk about that in your newspaper.
Right.
These things are needed. The one school that I saw that the children were going, they were having a dance on Friday night. I worked Friday. And the children were misbehaving like off the chain, off the chart, okay? One little girl actually had an accident in her pants, and because there was so much disorder, you know, so much chaos. I said, okay, you know, with all this chaos, what is the rule concerning whether they get a chance to go to the dance? At first, one administrator told me, well, no, they're not going to go to the dance if they're being disrespectful. And I think the problem is that people are catering. They are lowering the standards in our community by catering to idiocracy, and to bad behavior, and to two or three things. It's a lot of things. Those are the ones that I just see overall. They're catering to parents who are whining, like children who want you to give their children whatever they want, regardless of the fact that they're not, you know, doing what they're supposed to do in the classroom, and that is do their work and be respectful to the adults. It doesn't matter to me. You know, they have this thing, David, to share with you real quickly. You know, we go into a school with a substitute teacher, and they have this thing that you're supposed to be able to get your class in order. If I come into your house, Mr. David Murphy, and I say especially if I came into your house and you raised your children, there was no such thing. If I came into your house, your children had manners and respect for me. If you came into my house, my daughter had respect for you and respected you. There was no such thing as, well, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that. No, it was the mere fact that you were an adult. And our community, with our children, they're under attack because they're being sold a bad bill of goods. And that bill of goods is that you do not have to respect authority, and if you don't respect it, there are no consequences. You know, when you're 10, 11, 12, 13, there are no consequences while you're in school. However, when you come out of school and you do something wrong, you're going to get locked up, right?
That's
you
right.
Know? You know, you're going to get locked up. But had we told these cute little, sweet little children, some of my boys and girls, the girls with the long hair that's swinging everywhere, they look beautiful, you know, they're like the little movie stars, but they're not being taught the importance of having respect, even if it meant taking the dance away from them, being serious about it. So the children said to me, it didn't matter that I told their teacher or principal what the different things that they did do and they did not do. They knew they were going to that dance. And why did they know that, David? Because they went last year and the year before. So along with what you're saying, it's a mentality. It's on TV. It's permeated all through the television media to indoctrinate our children to be disrespectful, to indoctrinate some parents to think it's okay for their children to be disrespectful, and to indoctrinate us as African Americans to be disrespectful to ourselves, to each other. You know,
yep,
and so it's
a disparity that takes place. See, this has been going on from generation to generation. And, you know, so they reached a generation before this generation, and before that, no jobs. No money that's put back into our community. And see, these are the after effects of things that's been taking place from century on down. But there's a disdain thing for black people all over this world. Like I say, those communities I went to, they weren't all Caucasian. Some of them was Mexican, Americans or Hispanic. Excuse me, I dropped the phone. But I do know this, that a part of our taxes, a lot of our taxes have went into those communities because, like I say, the structures of the streets and everything else was pristine and up to date and things like that. You know, people, the residents didn't do that. The city does that. You know, make sure everything was taken care of. You know, bright lights and police protections and make it business friendly and things like this and make sure the houses are well kept and everything like this. But this is what happens when you slowly and systematically poison a person. They continue to begin to die slowly. And, that's why I say it's extremely important that we, those of us, are still conscious. We have to. This is serious, serious stuff. Now, I'm just driving through the community, and like I said, I see the tale of the two cities. And if the truth be told, not one group of people is better than the other group of people. Everybody brings something to the table if they were given equal chance and equal opportunities. And
yeah.
But unfortunately, even though we have black politicians here and there, this, that, but you know, there's people over top of them who run the commerce and it's an economic empowerment, that old school money taking place. But look, I'm going to have to leave a little early today because I have some commitments I have to take care of. But I made sure that I have, you know, took some time to come on the show because it's extremely important. I'm going to leave this battlefield and go into another battlefield. The war is raging, and, you know, so we have to fight on many different fronts. And so I thank you, Brother Sitara, and I thank you, Sister Cynthia Jahi. And but I'm going to have to get up off of here, and I thank you for the opportunity. And I want everybody to know that National Black Unity News is available. You can go to thenationalblackunitynews.com, or you can call 443-455-2373. Back to you, Brother Sitara and Sister Cynthia.
Thank you. We look forward to picking back up on your trip when you come back next week.
Okay, man.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate having you on the show. And, you know, we'll continue this dialogue as we move on. Just to pick up where David left off, it is so important that we make sure that people know how to get to the roadmap in our various communities where people can find prosperity and prosperity-minded people and being able to find an opportunity that can lead towards real Kujichagulia, which is self-determination, and being able to participate fully and openly in society and in the communities in which where we live. Because if not, then, you know, then why are we here?
Yep, I agree. But look, I'm going to have to go now, but I'm going to have to go. Love you both, and y'all keep doing what you're doing. I just want the people to know that y'all frontline soldiers have been for many years and continue to keep up the good fight until the victory is won. God bless you all.
Thank you. God bless you, Dave. Yeah, it's very important what David has shared. You're still there, right?
Still here, yes.
That was very important because I felt the same way as I drove through on the bus through Arbutus. And also when I was driving about a month or so ago through leaving through where John Hopkins is building, coming down and viewing all of the houses that are falling down all through John Hopkins that they're going to be buying up, all up and down North Avenue, coming up through Coppin State University, and then coming up all through Park Heights and Rochester Road. I don't know all that happened because I would need to interview more people and, you know, pay attention, you know, meet the people who were consciously paying attention to what was happening. But right now it's being treated as if, you know, oh, the city's going to make, Baltimore is so beautiful, we're going to have a garden area and we're going to have all these beautiful things. But in my opinion, it was at the cost of black lives. Black lives do matter. We are treated with so much disdain, and then the script gets flipped on us, you know, midway. You know, the script and so it gets flipped on us because we were living, like I was saying, if your neighborhood, if there's a block separating you from Little Italy, and there's a block separating you from Upper Park Heights, and you're looking, literally able to look across the Upper Park Heights, and you don't see anybody shooting, you don't see any drug paraphernalia, you don't see anybody selling drugs, so those people who are not participating in that, they've got to say, you know, well, why is it that that neighborhood is not experiencing what I'm experiencing in my house, in which I have a 30-year mortgage, and I'm talking about those homes where you had a husband and wife, or maybe a husband and wife both working, or the husband working, or the wife working, or single, you know, maybe a single mother raising her children, going out to work. Those people, you know, were given a bad bill of goods. You know, there are people who bought homes for a dollar on Fulton Avenue, and they were promised that their whole area was going to be developed, and it was not. It was not. And they were plagued for over 20 years with, you know, people breaking in with a lot of drug traffic in the front of their homes and the back of their homes because there was no backup, you know, like, in other words, their one or two blocks was it for development, right? That just was two blocks. And so behind them is total devastation. To the east of them, total devastation. To the west of them, total devastation. In front of them, total devastation. And so you begin to tear down and wear down on the good citizens, or I'm not saying the other citizens were good, on the citizens who survived the drug war. Those people who were able to survive the drug war, slowly their finances, their self-esteem, gets, you know, what do you call it, broken down. And to the point where some people just left the city. They just left, you know? They left the city that they loved. They left the city that they loved because there was no, they had no hope. Who wants to raise, no one wants to, no logical, intelligent person really wants to raise their children in a war zone. When you know for a fact when your child steps their foot out of the house, that bullets are flying early in the morning, late at night. And I saw those stories told at the March on D.C., the March for Our Life, about, you know, what's happening in Chicago, what's happening in L.A., what's happening in Baltimore, what's happening in D.C., what's happening in these other New York City, New Jersey, you know. And it's systematic. It's by design. And we have to find a way to make it through these situations and take control of what's going on. We have to become more of control of what's going to be happening, you know, for our future. We got to be able to fight the war. You know, we got to win the battle because our grandchildren don't have any reason to feel any type of loyalty to stay in any particular place. And I don't blame them, really. They can just go live anywhere they want to live because why would you have loyalty to live someplace that's it's not going to look out for you? So, I mean, I'm real happy for the National Black Unity newspaper. I did get out with a couple of youth last week to sell the paper to a couple of people. We're going to get some thank you cards to those people. See which way this program's going to go, how I'm going to work, pick up with some more youth and see what's going to happen with that and hopefully get some youth online to help promote the paper also, which that could be interesting. They probably know more about how to promote it online than I do. But that, again, is a very important. Staying in the newspaper gives us an opportunity to stay connected business-wise, because it's going to be through business, through finances, that we're going to make some changes. You know, you talked about it for years, about the cultural aspect, you know, having a strong family foundation, a strong cultural foundation, and also a strong financial foundation in our community to lift us up and to bring us through. We got to start keeping those dollar bills in our community. You cash your check, it should be able to be money going back into our community. And I am finding out, even for myself on a personal level, for me as an individual and even with my sister, you're just taking the time to mentally be able to say, okay, I'm going to buy this from this business because it is African-American owned, or it's black owned, it's African owned, it's African-American owned, black owned, either one is fine. A person of color is owned by, especially African American. We have to consciously think about that. You know, the first thought is going out and you'll get what you want to get, but the first thought should be, where am I going to spend my money? How is it going to benefit my community? You know, how is this? How? Yeah, that has to be the question. how is what I'm about to do going to benefit, going to strengthen my community? And that's going to have to take the conscience to start. The one thing that's so interesting is that the average sister will go get her hair done by another, at an African-American hairdresser. The average brother will get his hair cut at a African-American barbershop. Most African-American families will get themselves buried by an African-American funeral home. So now we've got to look at clothing, getting your nails done. Most women will get their nails done usually at a place that's Asian operated. You know, how can we look at other big ticket items, restaurants, clothing, things that we work that we've done on our car, buying cars, you know. I think there's an African-American dealership out this way, I ran the sale. Consciously saying, I'm going to go to a black dealership. I'm going to go to an African-American boutique for my clothes. I'm going to get my eyeglasses from a person that's an African-American. I'm going to get my teeth done. It really takes thinking about it, remembering and saying, oh, yeah, let me make sure I do that first. And that's
our
community also.
It reminds me of, you know, when I was in New Orleans and my good friend Kirk Pellerin, you know, he had halls that he rented out. And his primary target business was people who were having repasses. And, you know, it was like, you know, basically it was a market for him in terms of the community of black people who, when they had a repass, to look at, well, who can we rent from? Who can give us a good deal on what we want to be able to do and that of the in terms of the family. So he has sort of cornered that market. And still has a corner on that market.
Yeah, based on need, yeah. Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So there was definitely a need there for that.
Need and then customer service.
Yeah. Mhm. And that's a very important piece right there.
He used to always tell me, so, you know, people, they're already going through the loss of a loved one, a family member. So the last thing they need is to have a bad experience with people that's renting the hall.
Right.
He said, you know, that can't happen. He said,
exactly.
So that was part of, you know, it was part of his making sure that people that was engaged in the process, was him being able to provide the service, that, you know, that they were informed about how to conduct business.
Right. Mhm.
So, but you know, all of that's good, all of that's great. winding down, gotta get ready for this evening in terms of some things we gotta do in relationship to our business, and I'm looking at how to engage in the dinner that I helped fix that we will be consuming as we wind down getting over these hairways. So unless you really have some other things you want to share and go through, we can do that. If not, then we want to go ahead and wrap up for the day, and you can give out your information again to our Jasari's Love Show. And since you're there, one of the things that we need to do is get a commitment from Isaiah so that we can recapture his new voice, so we don't have to use his voice from when he was a 6-year-old.
Okay, well, I will work on that, and I pray that I can get that done before he is 26 years of age. actually been kind of busy lately. But again, thank our listening audience. I hope that you got something out of the changes of the weather, the ecosystem, having a desert, food desert in your community. Keeping an eye out, looking out for your elderly, look out for your family members to make sure they can get adequate food, that they're eating healthy. And no matter how old they are, you can introduce them to fruits and vegetables. Introduce yourself to the berry family. That's berries. I'm talking about blueberries, blackberries, strawberries. Wash them off and eat them. Get them in your diet every day if you can. Just a little handful is good. And just really thinking healthy, because a healthy body and a healthy mind will get us set for what Dave was talking about, and that is building our community. We have to do that. My husband talked about the gardening piece. Pulling all these things together, this is the Gisella's Love Show, a part of Home Based Business 101. And my husband's going to give you our web address. I'll give you a number you can text me on, 252-406-0774. If you want more information on healthy eating, on a healthy lifestyle, on some of the things we do with the gardening project, you can contact me there. We will be putting out our different e-books and different kind of books and things to help people try to tie some things together, change your life, make it better for yourself, for your children's children's future. I know that some people don't care about the future, but if you're one of the people who do care about what the planet is going to be like for your children's children's children, then stay in tune with us at the Jasari's Love Show, which will be coming on that on Sunday evenings at 3 o'clock. And, again, 252-406-0774. You can connect with me, Cynthia Jahi, on Facebook, C-Y-N-T-H-I-A, last name J-A-H-I, on Facebook. And I will be getting my website and all that taken care of. But right now, we can just keep it. We can keep it. You know, you can just message me and keep in touch with me, and we will take it from there. And, of course, our travel business. If you truly are traveling and you want to travel more often, but you want to, don't want to spend a lot of money on your travel, but you want to stay at some of the best hotels in the country, then contact us, because we have the ability to be able to show you how you can do that. So stay in touch with us. My husband will give you the other information. Sometimes you can give him the Voicex, if you can give him that, as well as, again, you can text me. I'm interested in saving on my travel. 252-406-0774. Just give me your name and that you're interested in saving on your travel, and then we can talk about that also.
All right. And well, thank you so much for sharing that information with people. And just want to close out letting people know that you can go to myvortex365.com/MU group, and you can sign up for a free usage of being able to search for cheap trips or inexpensive trips that will enable you to get the most out of your traveling experiences. And, you know, hey, we just want to be able to share that. Then if you want more deeply discounted trips, then we can talk to you about being able to upgrade to a travel membership. So with that said, hey, I want to say, hey, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Glad to have you on the show today. Glad for all of the information that we was able to share. Glad for the contributions of Mr. David Murphy of the National Black Unity News. And we're just happy to be able to share the information that we shared. And I close this out with saying, I'm going to greet this day with love in my heart. And with that said, hey, Tutanana.
Tutanana.